Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another Top 10 Debate. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by Michael Hamflett from What Culture's talk about shocking WWE babyface burials. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we review Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW Dynamite, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Hamflett to talk about his list, 10 shocking WWE babyface burials you totally don't remember, which is, of course, available to read right now at whatculture.com, as well as all the other usual good stuff. Hamflett, what was the inspiration behind this list?
The inspiration is going to sound like I was being forward-thinking, but it wasn't actually me. It was a well-known wrestling Twitter scamp by the name of Eandrew Dice Clay.
Oh, if you're not following him, get on board.
Great contributor to the content. Friend of mine from the internet forum years that I'd like to pretend didn't happen. And a Sunderland resident as well. So an all-around great man and legend. He brought up this segment in preparation for the Ultimate Warrior content that we were going to be given in deluge, as it turns out, as A&E decided to change their schedule around so he could get the jump on Dark Side of the Ring's take on the Warrior. By reposting a segment where Warrior, as WWE champion, kind of like brought a little girl onto the Brother Love show who was in the Warrior face paint and went by the name of Amanda Ultimate Warrior and then did a handstand and all this sort of stuff. And it brought to mind something that I know myself and Sidgwick have pontificated on before over the virtual desks and indeed with you on podcasts. Roman Reigns saying the things he said as a babyface was not a new phenomenon. John Cena's, what was it, bologna, mustard and fudge, whatever it was, like, not a new phenomenon. It's all WWE knows when it comes to their top baby faces. And the Ultimate Warrior trotting out Amanda Ultimate Warrior with half his face paint on as a way to try and humanize this character. Indeed, I think it was actually Sidgwick that brought the tweet to my attention and said, God, remember this, you know, be a fun one to talk about. Like, it just made a mockery of that gimmick. They were obsessed with humanizing him as their new world champion instead of him being this just agent of chaos that he was as the Ultimate Warrior, this unhinged lunatic, which, you know, documentary one in the books doesn't stem too far away from some of the, you know, some of the reputation that he said he, you know, might have had at the time. But they were determined to make him a human being as well as, well, a literal Ultimate Warrior. Failed horribly. It was part of a title reign that was bombing virtually from the off. And it's really cringeworthy because I don't want to be one of them hacks. I don't want to be every student in every student living room thinking that they're reinventing the wheel when it's, wasn't that kid's character from when he was young a paedophile? No, he wasn't. No, he absolutely wasn't. That's not what anybody was saying. But it's still weird when this, like, lunatic, this agent of chaos, is planting a kiss on a kid's cheek on television and talking about ultimate love instead of just the fact that he's going to squash Rick Rude at SummerSlam. I'd rather loads more of the latter than some of the former. Thanks very much.
And I'm going to go for the first entry in this properly to the most obvious choice, because I read this and I saw you'd written it and I thought, well, Diesel's magazine's going to be on this, isn't he? And he was. Diesel, number four. Diesel's WWF magazine cover. You've talked about this on many occasions, but it bears repeating because, well, you had flashes of it recently with Raquel Gonzalez that they're like, hey, everybody likes you now.
Yeah. I would apologize for being predictable, but I kind of relish the opportunity to bring this up whenever I can because it's just a mistake that they make so often. I've put this in the article. I think that it really does speak to how few people were watching this product that this isn't brought up more. This magazine cover, of which the full glorious image is available in the article at whatcults.com if you want to check it out, finds Diesel a month into his title reign in the era of the magazines, and those that maybe didn't have access to Monday Night Raw every week, they might have been finding this magazine for the very first time, finding out that Diesel is world champion. So this is your first impressions count for everything. And your first impression of Diesel as world champion is not the guy that did all the damage to the babyfaces at the Survivor Series, then just turned on Shawn Michaels when he'd had enough. He's not the guy that threw all those guys out of the Royal Rumble to the point where Vince McMahon stood up and took notice and was like, I'm going to push that guy. Look at how big he is. People are chanting for a big guy. I'm going to push him. And he's handsome and he's funny. And he seems like he can relate to people and he can connect to people despite being big. He's not the guy that for 1994 was just the cool guy looking over Shawn Michaels' shoulder, waiting very possibly to be anointed as the WWE champion. He's Diet Lex Luger, who was Diet Hulk Hogan. He's clutching the title, much in the same way Ultimate Warrior is clutching Amanda Ultimate Warrior, oddly enough, with this big beaming smile on his face in front of what can only be described as a flesh-coloured curtain that kind of looks like a close-up of some wrinkled skin, as if to suggest maybe he's gone for this smiling belt-hugging photo shoot in an old folks' home. Nothing about this.
It looks like someone's hanging up their mattress cover to dry in the background.
Diesel was the hardest man in WWE for a year. And the hardest part of this magazine cover is a picture of Chuck Norris immediately over a shoulder of Diesel promoting that he just worked Survivor Series the prior year. It may sound like I'm overstating the significance of this, but if you think that already the kind of alarm bells are like kind of ringing a little bit, oh Christ, he's not as cool as he was 5 minutes ago. And then he goes on to have a total banger with Brett at the Royal Rumble, but he doesn't beat Brett. He doesn't go to a finish. There's run-ins. It's a great match, but he can't win his first title shot. And you're holding up the magazine of this smiling guy that has just failed in his first big match, like a year and a half after Lex Luger did exactly the same thing. Mm. You're thinking, you're not getting this, Vince. There's a really good reason why people aren't becoming your next Hulk Hogan, brother. As a fan, as a huge fan, as much as I love Diesel, and I think I've made this very clear on this podcast before, for all my eyes were turned to pro wrestling by the Ultimate Warrior, my first love was Bret Hart. Diesel was very much a second love. And then I looked at him and then he kind of became like a secondary love. And I just thought, Diesel's pretty great. I'll wait for Bret to get the belt back. I love Diesel. Look at him. He's a truck. He's class. But he's not going to replace Bret in my heart. And I think a lot of people felt that. So much so that at WrestleMania, when Diesel fought Shawn Michaels, Shawn managed to quite easily babyface himself by just being like the best version of himself as a pro wrestler. So, his days were numbered pretty much in that magazine coming out.
From the thing that made you very concerned to something that made me very concerned, a far more recent example of that, and that was how they treated Asuka. She shouldn't have dropped the title in the first place at WrestleMania. But after that, in particular, and it's, you know, rough to look back on even more so now, with her interactions with one James Ellsworth.
Oh, Jesus Christ, man. Like, this should be one of those times where you have to be as angry that nothing means anything in modern WWE as you are grateful for it. I quite like 2018 as a calendar year. When I think about 2018, those wrestling flashpoints that come into mind are generally quite positive. I think about two total banger Royal Rumbles. I think about just the transcendent first year of Ronda Rousey. I think about the Evolution pay-per-view and the year itself capped off by Asuka winning the women's title, the women's championship in a match with Becky Lynch as the man and Charlotte Flair in a ladder match. The year started with Asuka winning the Royal Rumble. So you're looking at all this and you're thinking, what a 2018 Asuka had. Absolutely amazing. Royal Rumble, TLC. Yeah, she lost against Charlotte at WrestleMania, but people love that match. Total banger. It's everything else that happens all the goddamn time. Like every week. That's why we're so freaking miserable on a Tuesday. Like, there's always something, man. And yeah, Carmella had, of course, cashed in on Charlotte, which, you know, kind of invalidated Charlotte's victory over Asuka, you know, so soon after it happened. Asuka gets the shot, and you think, right, if and when Asuka beats Carmella, they're going to have to do some sort of rubber match with Asuka and Charlotte to prove that, yes, she's won the title off an inferior champion, but, you know, could she beat Charlotte? WWE swerved that problem by having Asuka be Carmella's, like, first hurdle opponent. And they thought to themselves, oh, nobody's going to believe that Carmella can actually beat Asuka. So rather than just think, should we just not book her against Carmella? They thought, no, we got a better idea. Bring, I'm going to, again, use WWE phrasing because they got it perfect. Natalia, I think it was, that said it in that promo, wasn't it? Bring that chinless insect back. Put him with Carmella in an act that people quite enjoyed and have him wear Asuka's coat and mask as the babyface standstill interference of the week. It wasn't entrance music. It wasn't fire on the stage. It wasn't a trombone. It was that James Ellsworth has stolen your gear and he's getting his disgusting skunk smell on it. And Asuka just stood there, frozen in confusion, and Carmella stole one.
Just looking back at that, it is just preposterous. Because did they have a... I'm just Wikipedia-ing this. Did they have another match after that?
Well, I think she beat her with Ellsworth as a ring second.
Yeah, he was in a shark cage. It went 5 minutes.
Yeah. And this is why, like, I say worse than a burial, because I, like, burials come in many forms, and, you know, they'll have had... in their minds, they're protecting Asuka. The last thing they're thinking is, oh, like, people are going to receive her as doomed after this. That's exactly what happens. It's exactly what happens, because people just, like your baby faces. Asuka, this killer of NXT, looks like an idiot. Once upon a time we were born, I might have sat on a podcast with you and said, when she was undefeated, dread it, run from it, it's Asuka. I couldn't say that after this. And just thank goodness nothing like this would ever happen again.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Let's talk about Triple H. He always pops up on these lists, and it really annoys me, this one. Because I was a huge fan of Brian Kendrick and Paul London. Even when my sort of vague interest in WWE was sort of waning, I loved London and Kendrick. I remember one of the games, I can't remember which one it was, I got it and I was like, I'm going to do a career with Paul London. Mm-hmm. And it went, bollocks to you, you can't play him on this game. Or you certainly can do a career as him on this game. And I think if I tried to beat him in the Royal Rumble, it was like Vince had written the game, because I remember trying to do like an Irish whip to send someone out of the ring. And they just sort of stood there and it was like, you're too much of a little bitch to be able to throw anyone out of the Royal Rumble. Personified by what Triple H did to him and Brian Kendrick after they just helped him.
Such a great example there, Wilborn, of exactly the type of wrestler Paul London was. I was always a bit of a sucker for Rhino in the exact same spot. And it was just the game had just decided that he wasn't going to be able to get to the ability level, no matter how hard he tried to get like a top title on him. Yeah, Paul London was exactly that. Him and Brian Kendrick, as a tag team, had a long reign as champions on SmackDown. Overlooked, but the matches were always tremendous.
M&M they worked with and stuff.
Yeah, kind of low-key pay-per-view highlights. Aerialists, they both were. There were a couple of dolphins flying in those tag title defenses. So yeah, just really well liked. Absolutely no reason to do anything bad to them unless you were in a feud with them, because they were always hitting a ceiling. Like, they just weren't Vince guys, evidently. Paul London wasn't going to suck up to the stupid things the company would request of them, as wonderfully highlighted in the legendary smiling at Vince in the face as he's walking out of Raw, all that good stuff. And yeah, this, as I put it in the article, what people really dislike about Triple H is that a lot of the time you have to like really dive into the postscript of why he was such an arsehole. Like, you need long form conversations to be like, well, he was really like the Brock Lesnar feud. He won at WrestleMania. Nobody's going to remember the SummerSlam match or the frigging Extreme Rules steel cage 2 out of 3 falls match. They're going to remember WrestleMania when he won there. He let Booker T win on a Raw. Where did he beat him? WrestleMania. Oh, yeah, but that meaningless tag match on Raw, so, like, dealt with the racism storyline. This is what he does. He put over Jeff Hardy, clean in the middle, then stared down the lens of the camera and shrugged. Oh, got me this time. You know, like, that's not exactly seeing the writing on the wall for your main event run, is it? Like, that's how he does business. It's how he always did business. He's really insecure. He's not as good as the people he thinks he's as good as. And he just pedigreed them into the dirt here. He pounded their dicks into the dirt because they had the temerity to help him out. I love this. Again, more Triple H.
Yeah, this, like, is perfect.
So, like, he's getting beaten down by Lance Cade, Trevor Murdoch, and Carlito. Carlito, he was feuding with, who he was going to crush easily at the pay-per-view. He's getting beaten down by all three. London and Kendrick come out to help. London and Kendrick end up face down on the mat, getting pedigreed. After Triple H does a, oh yeah, thanks very much. You're not my friends. I'm better than Steve Austin. Like that. Pedigrees him. How had the match gone for him? The handicap match. He'd beaten the tag team champions, Lance Cade and Trevor Murdoch. He was getting beaten down 3-on-1 because he'd won 2-on-1. And like, that scene, there's that scene right in Family Guy. It's a bit crude. But like, I think Peter is in the house and like, Brian's got an older girlfriend, but she's experienced. And like, all these men come into the house and they know this old girlfriend. And Brian's like, oh, right, bloody hell. You know that guy, do you? And then there's one guy that just walks past that's like, going to go sleep with her, and then I'm going to do other things tonight. I said, this ain't even my whole night. You know, she's just like, sleeping with her is just one part of his evening. Like, Triple H winning the handicap. This ain't even my whole night. I'm going to bury another tag team.
What?
He loved it. He loved it.
Another person I feel quite sorry for. Less so when it's The Rock doing it to him, but more so when it's Stone Cold, is Billy Gunn.
Oh, look, yeah,
I interviewed him. He's a lovely bloke.
Yeah. I don't like Stone Cold Steve Austin in the year 2000.
No.
I've banged this drum for a long time. I just have such deep affection for the year 2000. WWE having, like, overcome WCW in 1998, having achieved, like, enormous, undeniable mainstream success in 1999, had, how can I put this? The product smelt a little bit less of beer and spunk in the year 2000. It was marginally better to its women. It was intricately booked in a way that WWE had never been intricately booked before. WCW was in the mud. ECW was financially destitute, so they signed the best in-ring talent. It was, AEW loved this phrasing, it was the buffet.
Mm.
WWE not only was the kingpin of pro wrestling, again, it was also the buffet. So you had all the big stars. Rock was the big mainstream star in the absence of Steve Austin. Triple H, for once, was what he said he was. He was the game, he was the best. Just a rich undercard of great pro wrestlers. X-Pac as a character was 2 years old, and that was deemed so old that the term X-Pac Heat was invented. That was how fast-moving and fresh everything was.
Yeah.
But they had to invent a term for a character that dared to be 2 years old. Randy Orton, Dolph Ziggler, 2 years old, right? That's how fresh all this was. And then Steve Austin wants to come back into the picture. Of course he's going to come back at the top level. Of course he's going to want to get revenge on the guy that hit him with a car. It's not 2021. He's not just going to forget it. Or in the case of Elias and Jeff Hardy, just believe somebody who it definitely wasn't. No. No, it is The Rock. It's not The Rock. We rule that. It's the Rock. So he was going to get to the bottom of all this, and there was a big rumor it was Billy Gunn. They'd, and I think there was, you know, possible plans that it was going to be Billy Gunn. They'd kept him away from the Survivor Series that night. He was conspicuous by his absence until match time. So when you see DX getting chased off into the car park before Austin gets hit by, you know, the car, all of DX there apart from Billy Gunn, and it's weird. It's noticeable. And Billy Gunn was always this best pure athlete guy. Of course, he'd had that feud with The Rock. He was King of the Ring. So it was always this idea that, you know, maybe he's a guy. Apparently, Austin is just like, no, he's not a guy. No, that's no. And like, I guess he compromised on Rikishi because it would get him back to Triple H, which would get him back to The Rock. You know, he saw that as making it a touch more sense. Oh, I don't know. He just respected Samoans maybe. But yeah, like Billy Gunn was given the nope off Steve Austin for this particular role. And Billy Gunn thus was given a promo to go out and face Austin man to man and address. He'd been gone for a year too, but his return obviously wasn't as, you know, popular. So he comes out making his own grand return. And I remember being pretty hyped for this. Like, here we go. The internet was a buzz. Maybe it's Billy Gunn. Speculation. They're going to confront it right now. I'm quite pleased Billy Gunn's back. I used to buy into JR's best pure athlete in the WWE narrative. He's tall and jacked, good hair, all the things that I care about.
Yeah.
And, you know, there he is, face to face with Steve Austin. He tells him categorically, it's not me. He gives him evidence. He gives him clues. And he gives him help. He sends him in several, like, key directions in his investigations. And Austin, in a moment that really could have put Billy Gunn over, says, like, look, you know, I don't trust anybody. You know, I'm pretty angry. You see me stunning all the mid-carders lately. But I believe you, you know, and thank you for this. The new information is going to be really helpful finding my man. And then he says, but I never liked you anyway. And you just hit him with a Stone Cold Stunner. Welcome back, Billy Gunn. You're just like everybody else. You're just a number. Like, crowd goes wild, of course they do. You're not going to be in a building and not pop to a Stone Cold Stunner, especially not in the year 2000, especially when there's not been that many of them. But Christ, there was a frigging lot of them when he got back. Every single week on SmackDown. I was thinking Too Cool. Never the act for me. I was thinking like Too Cool was just like really, really fun. The Worm was just earnestly fun. Nobody was suggesting that Scotty Too Hotty was going to be challenging The Rock. You know, people just really laughed when Jim Ross was forced to say Grandmaster Shaxay on commentary. Like, because the product was fun, really fun. And then like Steve Austin comes out with a stunner to both of them and you're like, nice one. Stunners are class, but like, are other people not allowed in the playground now? Are they not, Steve? Is that how school works again? Is it prison? It's just a bit. I don't know. Really, like he got funny again in 2001.
Yeah,
and like it kind of tanked financially, so maybe he was onto something with all the stunners. I just felt in terms of an atmosphere and a vibe, something started to disappear when Austin came back.
Yeah. I've saved, as always, the best till last, because this is a very recent example, but one I kind of sadistically kind of enjoyed, if I'm honest.
I don't know what it's going to be.
And it's Seth Rollins.
Yay!
And he's there. And DX is there. And the NWO are there. And you think, wow, you know, being associated with those acts, pretty bloody special. Unless, of course, they mug you off and all hug each other and just leave you standing there. Like the lone prick at a wedding. The image, just check out the image. What good you not? Oh, I remember this being a meme everywhere. Just like, I remember watching it going, it's like a bit of a bloody chump there, doesn't he?
Oh, God. So, yeah, like Seth Rollins, stick it on his like 2019 year to forget almanac. Twitter moved on so quickly that I don't think this meme got the respect it deserves.
No, it needs more.
It was really... really hot for a day, wasn't it? And then, you know how it is. Twitter's pretty brutal. On it went. What's great about this is that Sir Rollins was on his arse a little bit with the wrestling fan base because of a number of those tweets. If you remember, what was it? Stomping Grounds was the best pro wrestling period. And then
he wasn't even a poster for Stomping Grounds. It was called Stomping Grounds, for Christ's sake. It was throwing yeah. Reigns doing a fist. I'll forever be angry about that.
It was that show you went to bat with, and that was the one where they only had a three-sided arena.
Yep, yep.
Curtained off that one side of the building. He'd got into a bit of a spat with Ospreay, which, you know, fine, I'm not an Ospreay guy, but what happened in the end of that was when he tried to use Ricochet, keep working, little man, we've already got one of you, and he's miles better. And then Ricochet, Will Ospreay, for Christ's sake, had his life. I mean, no further comment. Seth Rollins then decided to like mock how rich Will Ospreay was in comparison to him, which is never a good look, is it, for your top baby face flexing wealth. So it just hadn't gone well. He'd lost his title to Brock with a view to winning it back, but people loved the Brock title change so much they didn't really want to see Seth get the belt back. they did at SummerSlam. That match went really well, but like, it wasn't this sort of heartbreaking thing for Seth to have lost the belt back to Brock after the real catharsis of him winning it at WrestleMania 35. All of that had drained away. And yeah, this whole thing was another one of them dreadful reunion shows where the present roster were just pied off by the old guys. But Seth Rollins wasn't supposed to be the one getting pied off. DX and the NWO chased off the OC, the heels, when the OC tried to do the too sweet thing. All the old guys got the licks in on the young guys. We wish it doesn't happen, but it does. You know, they're kind of addicted to all that sort of stuff. So they run away. And then Rollins is given a bit of an honour, because you know how particular Sean and Triple H are with the DX stuff. Nobody's allowed to wear the T-shirt. Nobody's allowed to do the catchphrases or the crotch chops or whatever. But Rollins was given the honour of doing the, if you're not down with that, we got two words for you. And like, you can see how buzzed he is. Like, you can see how I'm different to the rest. Like, I'm not like the others. I'm going to get over as a result of my time with the legends in the ring rather than get buried. So he really like sort of widened his stance, put his arm out like he's the Rock. The neck goes back. I got two words for you. Crowd goes, suck it. You get the brick it down. And then like, you think all the baby faces are going to come together and you think, right, because Seth Rollins isn't the baby face, is he? So all of the old guys, as you pointed out, come together in this hug. And what's great about this image getting captured by somebody before the hug breaks up, I don't know if any of them in there had a shred of empathy. I'd like to think Sean Waltman, because he's the one I like, or Kevin Nash, but then I think he's a slave to the banter and he just wanted to do it. Like, sees Rollins, but rather than invite him into the hug, they just split off. So he never gets it. He never gets brought in. But thank goodness somebody screen capped it for the meme. Because what's so great about the image is not just that he's being ostracized from a hug when it's somebody that you kind of want to take a few licks, but his face sells it.
Yeah.
It's like a wrestling rib. The whole deal with wrestling ribs is you're supposed to not sell it. So, you know, if you sell it, then the ribs are going to get worse. Rollins, with this slapped arse expression, just has this like, why? Why me? It's like Mario Balotelli celebrating a goal at Old Trafford. Why always me? As these legends that get this amazing ovation. The clip finds Triple H and Kevin Nash locked in a shared laugh. And I want to believe, like Triple H in particular, really enjoying it. I want to believe it's Big Kev saying to his old pal Paul, I think Rollins is right behind me, you know. Triple H going, yeah, I know, it's great. I'm not associated with him anymore, I don't care. He's Paul London to me.
Yeah, what I get from it is DX and the NW. Oh, which is... His face is such a picture. And like you say, it was already going down the tubes at that point. The locker room leader bollocks.
Mm.
So I can sort of enjoy it. It wasn't like, oh, there's old bastards just ruining what would have been a great... Nah, I'd already given up on him by that point. I was already like, yeah, piss off. Dick.
And if you hadn't...
Flashy suits again, I'll like you again.
Funny you mentioned locker room leader. If you hadn't given up on him, you would here, because it's not like the Bushwhackers forget to include him in a hug. Like, Triple H is a boss. Sean's got a big role at NXT. Road Dogg has a big role of NXT. He might even then have still been loosely attached to creative on the main roster. Like, these are not just some old guys that have come back and have forgot to include him in something. They're some of his immediate superiors.
Mm.
And there's some people that the locker room will be looking on and thinking, yep, don't need to care about Seth now. Like, I hope the Miz was like, I think I'm going to go and eat some chicken over his bag. All time sick. What's he going to do? Nothing.
It is the equivalent, isn't it, of like, we're going for some drinks after work, actually. If you want to bring that work experience, kid, yeah, it seems all right. Bring him along. And them going, nah, I'm all right. I love it. And there's some of all the great ones in this list. Go and check it out, whatculture.com. 10 shocking WWE babyface burials you totally don't remember. And let us know your thoughts on what we've sadistically discussed on Twitter, at whatculturewe. Well, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at...
Michael Hamflett.
Follow me at Adam Wilburn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling for daily wrestling podcasts, of course. But thanks once again to this article's author, Michael Hamflett. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.